Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Roan. Carter Rodriguez is still out in LA being a big shot. So instead, I'm not going to call you an interim co-host. I'm going to call you the voice that's going to join me.
This is a major upgrade, man. This is an enormous upgrade.
I'm not going to comment, but I can't really disagree. That delightful voice that you guys hear is Adam Mars, site manager for Denver Stiffs, host of the phenomenal Locked On Nuggets podcast. If you guys haven't checked out the podcast and kind of special episode that you did there with Will Barton, do so. It is pinned on his Twitter account. I really enjoyed it. The Nuggets are kind of my Western Conference side chick. And especially when the Cavs are bad, I typically try to find some team out West that'll be my second team. It used to be Portland with Brandon Roy, but now it's the Nuggets. Adam, how's it going, man?
It's going great. We're recording this mere seconds after the Nuggets escaped by the skin of their teeth in Chicago. So it's kind of a hectic feeling at the moment. But I will say this. You mentioned Denver is your side chick in the Western Conference. I think a lot of people – I get that a lot. A lot of people seem to root for Denver on the side, I guess, which is, I think, kind of cool.
See, a big thing for me, too, is I have family in Denver, so it's probably the U.S. city that I've visited the most. It's also the furthest I've ever driven in one day. It's about a 16-hour drive from Winnipeg, and that is a hell of a drive.
Is it pretty? Is it a good drive?
Not really. I mean, you're going through, like, North and South Dakota. Like, two-day it and, like, check out Rushmore and stuff like that, it's not too bad.
Yeah.
But yes, we're here to talk about the Nuggets, Cavs and Nuggets playing tomorrow or today, I guess, depending on when you guys are listening to this. Adam, first of all, the most important question. Are you familiar with the Me versus Nuggets movement?
I am. I think vaguely familiar. I'm out on so many of these, like, I guess it would be like weird internet things. But that's where you like eat as many chicken nuggets as the Nuggets score. Is that what it is?
Right. For every point the Nuggets score, you have to house a chicken nugget. So I know some people are going with Wendy's. Some people have gone with Burger King because they got the cheaper nugget options. But given how the Cavs are playing defense this year, I think there's real potential for somebody to at least go to the hospital tomorrow.
Yeah, well, I think just first of all, I'm a big guy. I'm 6'5", 6'6", you know, 240-pound guy. I don't think I could eat more than like 35 nuggets. So anybody that attempts this and has to put up like 80 to 130 nuggets, come on, man. I just can't imagine there's that many humans out there that could accomplish that.
Sweet hype break, bro. I really appreciate it.
Had to sneak that one in.
Yeah. Oh, man. So we're going to start things off, obviously, talking about the Nuggets and kind of how you feel going into this season. Off to a pretty good start. This win over Chicago, I'm sure, is one that you're happy to get in the books because that Chicago team is not very good. And it was just a bit of a disjointed game from the Nuggets.
Yeah, it was ugly. You could just say it was like a disgusting game. The story for the Nuggets this year, you know, they missed the playoffs 2 years in a row the last two seasons by one game. Right. And the story this year has been like, okay, they want to come in more focused. They want to take every game seriously. All the players growing a little bit older. They're still one of the youngest teams in the NBA, but, you know, just try to get a little bit more experience, more mature. And so through the first four games, it looked like the Nuggets were this focused team that was playing serious basketball throughout the whole game. The last couple ones, though, they've kind of looked a lot like the Nuggets of last year, which is a team that plays right at the level of their competition. If that's a good team, they play great. If it's a bad team, they play terrible. They should have lost tonight. They escaped by a miracle tip-in at the buzzer. But, yeah, so it's kind of disappointing. It's a short season so far, but it looks like the Nuggets – they're starting to look a little too much like the Nuggets of last year.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Like the Nuggets, as I said, are a team that I follow, but you obviously would have a better sense than I do. I think part of why people get hung up on the Nuggets and don't fully buy in, or even to kind of a larger degree, why people don't buy in on Jokic to the degree you'd think they would with somebody that's that talented, is there's just a variance with both him and the Nuggets where it seems like their highs are so incredibly high. They look just devastating when everything's clicking. You look how they were against the Warriors. And when you look at season-long numbers, you say, okay, the average of what the Nuggets are is so good. The average numbers for what Jokic does on a season is so good. But then you just don't have a lot of games that are close to that average. There's just such a strong deviation from one way or the other.
I don't think that has. I don't think that's why people are out on Jokic. I think
that's more about the Nuggets in general. But I think people that are critics of Jokic, they look at the season long numbers and then they just zoom their focus towards the games that he played poorly in defense.
Yeah, he's a guy like I thought he played really bad tonight. He had 22 points, 12 rebounds, 9 assists, and that's kind of how he is. Like sometimes he stuffs the stat sheet. Even when he doesn't play well, sometimes he plays really well and the numbers don't pop out. But you know, Denver is just, I think they were the third youngest team last in the NBA last season behind the Lakers and Celtics. I think we're the only two younger. And they play, I think a lot of what you're talking about there is just the fact that their point guard last year was 20 years old. Jokic is the star and he was 22 years old. So I think a lot of it just has to do, you're relying on guys who are in so many ways becoming young men and going through all of those things while also having to carry a team. So the variance was high there. But you know, just in terms of like how good the Nuggets are or anything like that, it's an early season, but they're 6-1. I think that narrative will change a little bit more this year than from what it was last year.
How much do you think the low points are just about the team developing chemistry and trying to figure out what kind of the hierarchy is within the team? Because you know that Jokic is going to be this talented facilitator up top. And what I like about the Nuggets, especially when they're clicking, is they don't have that one guy that necessarily creates for everybody. I mean, Jokic does that, but it's not the traditional wing player that drives and kicks for guys and creates. All these guys can create offense. Paul Millsap is a good passer for his position. Jokic is obviously a phenomenal passer for his position. Gary Harris and Jamal Murray can make good reads, and they're willing to give up the ball. So sometimes I think because there isn't really that established hierarchy outside of Jokic, the offense can become a little bit stagnant at times.
I think what you're really keying in on is that Jamal Murray is just not a point guard. I mean, I think he's a very good young player. He's got a lot of upside, especially as a scorer, but I just don't think he's a point guard. Teams have kind of keyed in on the fact that you can pressure him full court and he really struggles with that.
Right.
You almost never see a point guard get ripped in the backcourt. I think Murray's been ripped 5 or 6 times already this year, just from guys like, you know, sliding their feet, working, and then just getting poking the ball away. So I think that's what you're noticing, because when the Nuggets are able to get in their offense in the half court and get moving, they just play a really beautiful style of basketball. But teams that know how to disrupt that initial action, primarily by pressuring Jamal Murray or just kind of making him think above what he's at right now, then Denver starts to look really, really bad. But I think it all starts with right there, with just having that guy that can get them going, get the machine sort of chugging.
Mm-hmm. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but Jamal Murray, he's playing through a bit of an injury, right? Like, doesn't he have an issue with his tibia, that there's a bruise or something like that?
Yeah, so he got that in a game, I think it was against Sacramento earlier in the year. But before that, he had rolled his ankle pretty bad, like a week before training camp, maybe a week and a half before training camp. And so, you know, players, they sort of work their way towards camp in the offseason, with camp being like they should come in at – peak shape and all of that different stuff. Well, he ended up having to sit out 2 weeks or so going into camp, and just I think he's been out of shape and a little bit banged up to start with, and then as the season began, he got that deep bone bruise in the leg to go on top of the ankle injury. So I think he looks a little bit, not much, but just a little bit puffy, like, you know, like he could probably get in a little bit better shape, and then yeah, he just doesn't have a lot of explosion. He's not beating people off of the dribble. even Biggs will switch out on him. He has to go to the step back every time because somehow he can't get around him. So he definitely does not appear to be 100%. I'll say this, though. I don't know if that's what it is with him this year. I hope that's what it is because I think he's really struggled with a lot of the point guarding duties and even with his shot a little bit. So I hope that it's going to be blamed on injuries and maybe in 2 or 3 weeks' time he's back to what people expected of him this season.
I mean, maybe he's just trying to fit in with the team because the Nuggets are a bit of a puffy team. Like, Jokic always has the runny nose look. Paul Millsap isn't always the most defined.
The runny nose. I love it.
Yeah, so he's maybe he's just trying to fit in. But I think sometimes, too, he also just kind of has that Canadian hockey player thing where he's just always kind of playing through injuries. Like, in his rookie year, it was the abdominal injury, right? Or abdominal issues that he was having that he had corrective surgery for.
The hernia. Yeah, he had two hernias somehow, which, by the way, the Nuggets have gone through like a half dozen hernias in 2 seasons. So I don't know if there's something up with how they're stretching or training or what, but they're getting bit by the hernia bug.
I think you're stressing them out in the locker room.
Maybe that's it.
It's all that nervous energy you're giving off. Well, from a Cavs matchup perspective, I think with the struggles that the guards have kind of had, or at least Murray and Gary Harris didn't exactly have the best game. They both started off well against Chicago, but then that kind of tailed off. It's defending the guards has been such an issue for the Cavs early on. And that's kind of what you'd expect when you're playing Colin Sexton heavy minutes and Rodney Hood heavy minutes. What's kind of your impression from an outsider's perspective? Because the Cavs, even when they're not good, are never boring. What is your kind of read on the Cavs so far this year?
Well, my read is they're not very good, especially without Kevin Love. But
well read
so far. You know, I was really, really, and still, and remain really, really low on Colin Sexton as a player. I didn't like him at the draft. I don't really like his skill set now. I think he's good at some of the things that aren't necessary, and bad at some of the things. I just talked about Jamal Murray and some of his like point guarding instincts and skills and how, you know, that's really a hindrance to him. Well, I think the same will be true of Colin Sexton. Some of the stuff he's good at, you know, is almost like pickup basketball style stuff, whereas they're going to need him to really be a smart player. I think the number one trait a basketball player needs in the NBA in 2018-19 is some sort of feel or intelligence for the game and understanding of the game. I think the game is as smart as it's ever been. So players that are sort of beginning from behind on that front, I think, tend to have they're fighting an uphill battle. Jordan Clarkson, same thing. Not one of my favorite players. A guy I really don't like.
He's a little further down the development curve there.
I mean, he is what he is, right?
Yeah, he is 100% exactly what he is.
Yeah, and then, Chetty Osman, I think, is a really good player. He's a guy I actually am pretty high on his skill set. I don't know that
you're going to shine. You're pushing the right button so far on the podcast.
No, I think he's really good. I don't know that he's the type of good where he's going to make a bad team good, but no. I do think as that team starts to fill in and build, he'll be that guy that you plug in and he just fits every type of lineup and makes other guys better.
No, for sure. And I mean, for a second round pick, getting somebody that's like, at this point, it's pretty safe to say that he's at the very least a rotation player in the NBA. And he's had some very good games and he's had some bad. And part of the Cavs, or one of their biggest issues, has been they just don't have somebody that can really draw attention and create consistent opportunities for other guys. And this is a team built with specialists that were brought in to play off of one of those guys. And Jetty isn't exactly Turkish LeBron just yet. Sexton, I'm pretty much with you. Going into draft night, I now have the infamous tweet, anybody but Sexton, it'll be Sexton. I had the sense, and especially with him being a guy that LeBron and Rich Paul really liked, I figured that the team would go that direction.
I'm surprised that didn't work to keep him in Cleveland. That blows me away.
Yeah, and as somebody that has long thought that LeBron talking about Shabazz Napier was an intentional thing to screw over Miami on the way out, my mind can't help but run. The one thing I do like with Sexton is, well, one, I kind of like him as a person. I really enjoy that. And he, from all accounts, this guy just has a crazy work ethic. So It's all about...
That's huge. That's important.
Right. So it's all about whether or not he channels that in the right ways. Like someone like Russell Westbrook, there is no denying that that guy has a crazy motor. He plays really hard, but he doesn't really channel it in the right ways, and he hasn't channeled it into growing his understanding of the game. And Sexton, in the game so far this season, where he's done well is kind of when he doesn't get too excited and he's not trying to do too much and kind of letting the game come to him. And
yeah.
Even though I'm not super, super high on him, I do have some hope just because of that work ethic there.
Yeah, it's important to have guys, you know, to root for in that capacity. Like, I really do think the work ethic thing is, the longer I'm around the NBA, the more I realize how much that is such a huge part of separating players. I mean, we've right. seen guys like Oladipo make enormous leaps, and I mean, there's plenty of examples. But if I were picking guys of like where they're starting from, he would be incredibly low on my list of guys.
Right, and for me, it's just my bias is always towards shooters. Like, I think yeah. shooters and guys that, like, I've always thought that the individual assist is overrated, but at the same time, you have to be someone that's at least willing to give up the ball. Like for Denver, yeah. Jamal Murray, I don't think he needs to be a great creator. I think yeah. if the Nuggets are going to kind of hit their ceiling as a team with this roster, he has to be almost the lead play finisher in a lot of instances. But that being said, I don't think that they can have the most efficient offense possible if he's hanging on to the ball for too long and really using up a lot of clock. I think you need to promote that ball movement. You have to have a lot of guys that are looking to generate the best shot and just have him kind of as the guy finishing off a lot of those plays.
Yeah, no doubt about it. He's really quick, which is great. He's also 6'3", 190, which – is another just sort of, if you're kind of making a tally of things that concern you about him, the shooting would be high on the list, sort of the decision-making and how far he has to go there would be on the list. And then just the fact that he's 6'3", which 10 years ago you'd say, oh, he's got great size for a point guard, but now it's, oh, he can't guard small forwards if they switch. So
right.
That'll be an interesting thing to kind of follow.
What do you think is the biggest misconception people have about the Nuggets?
Man, you know what? It really just, for me, it all comes down to Jokic. I mean, I just think for him, the book on him is comical from just sort of like the national perspective. And quite frankly, I think a lot of it comes from like this weird sort of European xenophobia. He's got a brother
that,
who's
that stuff's always there. Yeah.
It's always there. And with him, you know, he grew up in a war. His brother's a professional MMA fighter who lives with him, and they like are always fighting with each other and, you know, showing up with black eyes and bruised ribs. And so like his growing up family friend is Darko Milicic, who's kind of a, you know, a well-known crazy person. So mm-hmm. I think Jokic has a lot more, he's just a lot tougher, a lot more skilled. And he's just not a lot of the things that you see people project onto him because he comes from a place nobody, I think Charles Barkley the other day guessed he was from Ukraine. So, like, I think just people just
yeah,
don't know.
Yeah, and based on his looks, that'd probably be where a lot of guys would guess.
Oh, he looks like a doofus. I mean, that's the other part of it is, yeah, he
looks like a blogger.
Yeah, he does look like a 7-foot blogger.
Especially with, like, this game against Chicago. Like, there was a couple times kind of late in the game there where rebounds or loose balls just kind of slipped through his hands, and you could tell he was just kind of a little off, like a second slow today. And when things go wrong, given the way he looks, it's like, okay, well, this guy's a goof. But at the same time, even when he's not playing well, he's putting up those gaudy stats, as you mentioned.
Yeah, so that to me, that's really what it all stems from, is a lot of people, I think, look at Denver. Here's another theory. I've been putting this out on different shows, especially Locked On Nuggets. Everybody kind of regurgitates the same talking points. That's one of the things, you know, basketball Twitter has sort of done is – everybody just starts saying like, oh, I heard this thing and now I'm going to repeat it. One thing everybody says is you can't win with a center that can't protect the rim, right? That's the big company line. And thing I'll say is last year in the playoffs, Clint Capella got played off the floor. He could not be kept on. Rudy Gobert, same thing. They had to swap him out and go small. And even Joel Embiid against Boston, they ended up going away from him late in games because he just wasn't producing value based on what he could do. The one thing all those three guys do is protect the rim probably as well as anybody in the NBA, but they're so one-dimensional the other side. My big thing I keep saying, and we're seeing this offensive revolution we're in right now, Jokic has to get better. Like, if you want to talk like making a championship, he clearly has to get better and move his feet. But the one thing he does that none of those players do is absolutely destroy and dominate every time any team goes small against them. The Warriors, their death lineup, he just absolutely destroys both on the offensive end and on the post. Draymond Green, they almost stopped doing it now. The last time they just played the other day, they wouldn't put Draymond Green on him because he just backs him down and turns and shoots those jump hooks. So there's this regurgitated talking point that there's this one style of basketball that works in today's NBA, and I just don't think that's true. We'll probably find out this year in a playoff how much his weaknesses, you know, outshine his strengths. But I have a feeling teams that try to go small against them in a playoff series will end up getting destroyed inside.
Yeah, I was going to follow up and kind of ask that, is there some concern that the getting played off the floor, schemed off the floor for a lot of these true centers, is there some concern that what he can do can be minimized a little bit or schemed out and he could be played off the floor in the same way? Because even if you are, as you said, a great rim protector, a lot of these skilled teams that are playing small, they can still kind of draw you out and make things difficult for you. And obviously he makes up for a lot of that with just how good he is offensively. Do you have some concern that what he does can be schemed against in a playoff series when you get to like the second and third round where you're really playing the elite of the elite?
I think it's going to be a lot like, I mean, it's all about matchups. And the team that just really destroyed Denver last year, beat them by double digits every time they met, was Houston. And Houston's the one team that, you know, they just force you to switch, and then they play in isolation and attack you that way. I think that's how you beat Jokic, is you force him to guard one-on-one on the perimeter 50 times a game. The thing is very few teams are capable of doing that or want to do that for a whole game. They would rather run their offense. They'd rather run pick and roll, or they'd rather get the ball moving, right, and other people touching it. So I do think there'll be teams that, and that'll be how teams attack him, is just try to make, you know, Steph Curry go one-on-one 25 times in a game against him. And they might have success with that, but most teams, that what they like to do with their bigs is draw those guys out on the pick and roll and bring them away from the basket. And then on the offensive end, they'll put a small guy on him and just, you know, switch everything so they don't get to roll to the rim and get that pick and roll lob threat against them. But Jokic offensively, he just has no weaknesses. He's an all-around player, and especially against undersized guys, he's so good at punishing them from scoring on the post, but also from passing out if you double, that that's why I think he's a bit different.
Now, obviously a large part of kind of building that team scheme, like I think so many people think, okay, you got to have a good rim protector and that's the only way you can have a good defense, when really limiting the amount of penetration from the perimeter is such, yeah, a big key, and lowering kind of the volume. Is that something that you think that the Nuggets are kind of improving on? Because, I mean, Gary Harris has kind of the profile, and he's shown an ability to be a really high-level defender, even though there have been stretches in his career where it hasn't really been kind of up to par. But with Will Barton and Jamal Murray, do you think that there's enough, at least with the starting lineup, enough kind of perimeter defense and enough talent there to really push back on teams that are trying to get into the paint?
Not at all. I think Gary Harris is that guy. He's I would say an above average defender, somewhere between above average and, like, you know, pretty good. But right. Jamal Murray, I think, is well below that defensively, both in his physical tools and in just, you know, his technique and everything else. And he's young. He could grow into a better defender. But I always thought the best way to build around Nikola Jokic is you're going to have a point guard that's an elite on-ball defender with some length. That is almost as crucial as anything else you do. You got to have a power forward who also is mobile and can rotate and help protect the rim. Paul Millsap has been that guy, and when those two are on the court together, they destroy. I think the point guard spot is going to be the one where you have to have a prime George Hill type player who, the offensive game, he needs to be solid enough to knock down shots and can dribble into the paint or whatever. But more importantly, he has to be able to have that length to really disrupt people in the pick and roll. And Denver, Jamal Murray, not only do I not think he's that now, I do worry if he's going to be that guy in the future. And he's a heck of a great player, but I do wonder if long-term those two guys are going to be great fits.
I'm a little disappointed you mentioned George Hill, because I thought you were teaming me up perfectly to make a George Hill for Jamal Murray joke. But yeah, you, thank you for cutting me off there. That's all. that's a lot of fun. The funny thing too is that Denver and Cleveland are kind of tied together by that trade that happened, but then ended up not happening. Where I guess it would have been Gary Harris to Indiana and Kevin Love to Denver. In retrospect, are you happy that that didn't go through?
Oh my God, yeah. You know, because that was for Kevin Love, right? I know Denver tried to get Kevin Love and they tried to get Kyrie Irving. There were deals and both involved Gary Harris. Gary Harris is the type of guy you want on your team, especially the contract Denver gave him. I remember at the time people thought, oh, overpay or whatever, reach. I mean, now he's playing at an all-star level. He's a guy.
Bradley Beal in a tougher conference.
He is. Yeah, I like that. And
if he was in the East and if he was in a more featured role, I really think he could put up very comparable numbers. And if you look at his numbers last season with Bradley Beal around the same age, you're looking at very, very similar players.
Gary Harris has the perfect name, Gary Harris. It's such a plain name. Like he's got no sizzle, you know, to his game. He's adding a little bit to it now. I think Bradley Beal is a much more dynamic one-on-one scorer. He can create his shot a little bit better. But Gary Harris is the most reliable player, among the most reliable players in the NBA. He's so steady and consistent in what he does. He knocks down his open shots. He hits a above-average number of tough shots, and then he just doesn't make mistakes. Defensively, he makes really timely. He's a clutch player. Because he always is coming up big in the fourth quarter, whether it's, you know, knocking down the tough shot at the right moment or just making the right read defensively. So he's a steady guy. And then I was joking about his name. He's such a quiet dude and he's such a quiet worker. Every year he comes back significantly better than the year before. And I keep waiting for that trend to end. It's going to end at some point, but so far through this season, it does not appear that it has ended yet. He's averaging 20 points. His assists are up, his rebounds are up, his percentages are up. He just keeps getting better.
I think he needs to change his last name to Elway, and that'll get people fired up, at least in Denver.
Definitely in Denver. It's funny though. Elway is he was like, this is how you know you just have to like disappear from the public spotlight, because everybody loved Elway. He's number one most loved athlete here in Denver, but he's still the Broncos logo now.
Broncos.
Yeah. Nice. Well done.
But continue. Yeah.
He's kind of ruining the Nuggets or the Broncos now. They won a Super Bowl 3 years ago, but the last 2 years have been bad, and now everybody's ready to run him out of town. So it's kind of funny that legendary status, it fades for everyone.
Well, I can speak from experience where the title glow doesn't exactly last as long as you do. I mean, I'm always going to enjoy it just as much, but I'm looking around and to me, it's still just so funny that like, I remember writing for Fear the Sword back in like 2013 and having people say, oh, look, Anthony Bennett can dunk with one hand. We need to play him over Tristan Thompson. We need to get Tristan down. And the fact that he is still here, that he's outlasted Kyrie, he's outlasted everyone on that team, outlasted LeBron, outlasted Ty Lue. It's remarkable to me that guy is still kind of sticking around. And thank goodness he finally looks healthy again and he's playing really well this season.
Isn't it weird that what you just said about that championship glow doesn't last as long as you think? Because for Cleveland fans and Nuggets fans are tied in that regard of like, I keep thinking, you know, one Nuggets championship would just mean so much because it's so unlikely to ever happen that just one would feel great. But it is true. You just move on with your life. You celebrate, you have a great time, and you always have the memory, but you just go back to being miserable as soon as the team's bad again.
Well, the funny thing was, I was listening to Lowe and Woj, their pod from this week, and they were talking about kind of the state of Cleveland, and they had mentioned, Woj was talking about, well, you know, they really don't have any assets. Like, look what they have to show from their last three first overall picks. Yeah. I'm like, okay, we got Kyrie in a championship, and we still have Kevin Love. Sure, the Bennett pick didn't really work out too well, but like there's still assets here, and then there's everything they got from Kyrie. And again, there was that championship in 2016. I feel like that needs to go in the equation. And then about 5 minutes later, they were talking about how Houston should give up four, not just the four first round picks, but they should be unprotected, because even if you suck in a couple of years, if you have a chance at the title, you have to give up everything long term to get that one title.
So they even are telling on themselves there. Like, they just need to listen to their own advice of, no, it's always worth it, guys. Like, if you get that
championship, not every team can be the Spurs, where you get the championships, you draft a franchise player, and like,
Spurs can't even be the Spurs, to be honest.
Exactly. That run has come to an end. Like, this is. You have to, if you have a chance at a championship, you have to go all in.
There you take it.
Speaking of kind of all in, what would you say is the type of move that you would like to see Denver do that you feel is necessary? Do you, is part of their strategy just waiting out Kevin Durant to New York next year?
You know, I always laugh. It's never going to happen. This is the NBA is in that weird spot where it doesn't matter how well you build your team and establish a culture or whatever. Like, some of these big players will never look. But I keep joking, like, kind of just casually throwing out there, isn't Denver the perfect spot for Kevin Durant? They have every position but small forward. He would come here and get 100% of the credit if the team became good, because even though the Nuggets, I think, are like a sneaky good team, they don't have any accolades behind them. They don't have any stars, so it would be one of those situations where, just from a pure legacy standpoint, it'd be good for him. He called Denver his favorite city in NBA city, and he's gone out of his way to praise Jokic. But here's the thing: he's never even going to consider it, so it doesn't matter. It's one of those things where they built it perfectly for a guy like him to come, but a guy like him will never come.
Now, in terms of a guy like him, I really was hoping that Cleveland and Denver would work out a deal when Kyrie had demanded a trade, because I'm like, either one of Gary Harris or Jamal Murray, I'd be happy. I didn't like a lot of the other offers out there, and this was predating him kind of accepting Boston as a possible destination. Do you wish that was a deal that they kind of pulled off? That, like, let's say you keep Gary Harrison, it's Jamal Murray and something else kind of thrown in. Would that have been something that you'd get behind?
Here's where I lose your listeners and they all turn on me. Is I am not a very big Kyrie Irving believer.
I remember we had wars back in the day. Yeah.
And I mean, I think he's great. Like, he was perfect for LeBron. I mean, LeBron does all the work, and then Kyrie's the guy that can finish. You know, one-on-one scoring is so overrated, except for in the final 4 minutes of a game. And so if you have a player like LeBron that can carry you, usually for 48 minutes, but sometimes, you know, for 44, and then you have a player of that caliber to close it out, that's a perfect fit. But Denver wasn't that way. Like, Denver needed way more out of him than that, and I just – you know, especially with Jokic, I think Jokic is that offensive type player that you don't necessarily need A-plus offensive players around him. You need A-plus defenders and smart players. And so I just never really liked the fit. It would have been fun. I think he would have been – this year, Denver would have been a complete mess because everybody would have known that Kyrie was out the door. Mm-hmm. So it would have been one of those things.
Hey, man. Hey. Legal weed.
Yeah. I don't even know if he smokes enough, man. Like, to to convince him to stay. But yeah, so that was it. You know, Jonathan Sharks had a really good article at the Ringer that's got me. I wasn't thinking this before he wrote it, but I kind of am now, about Dirk and Jokic are very similar in a lot of different ways, not just because they're both white Europeans, but in a lot of other ways, just personality, style of play. And he talks about Dallas's only real success came when they built four defensive players around Dirk and then just trusted that Dirk could turn those guys into passable offensive players. And I think the same might be true of Jokic at some point, where you don't need players like Kyrie. You just need a bunch of, like, Patrick Beverleys and, you know, okay offensive guys, but great defensive guys. And then just trust Jokic will turn all those guys into stars for a 7-game series.
Is Millsap that guy? Like, to me, Millsap is a really kind of interesting situation, because this is the last year of his contract, correct?
Well, the Nuggets have a team option for $30 million next year that they will almost certainly decline, yes.
Right. So to me, it's really interesting, because obviously you're kind of getting to that point where it's tough to improve the team via free agency, not just because it's Denver, but just because of the amount of cap space that's available. Yeah. And Millsap is a very good player, but he's obviously kind of on the back nine of his career. To me, it'd be interesting to see whether or not – just as a thought experiment, if moving him for guys that kind of fit, those defensive type players that you
are mentioning would be something that the Nuggets would look into. Because even if you're looking at some of the more offensive starved teams, I think there'd be the potential maybe to do a swap. Like maybe OKC kind of comes to mind, and get some of their better defenders. Although I'm starting to question whether or not Roberson will ever really make it back and be the same player that he was.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Roberson, as much as I love his game, and he's a CU guy, a University of Colorado guy, so it kind of makes sense for him to be in Denver, but he is so bad offensively that the only reason he's a good player is because he's the greatest perimeter defender or second greatest perimeter defender in the NBA. If he loses that and just becomes the 12th best defender, I mean, he's probably not useful anymore.
Right.
So yeah, he could have fallen off. I don't think Millsap is that guy. I think the best case scenario for Denver is that the Nuggets really have a strong year this year. Whether that just means regular season success or maybe they win a playoff series and it's just everything looks on the up and up. And then Millsap decides, you know what, I've made a ton of money, which he has. He's made more money than a lot of players that even are considered better than him have made in their career. And maybe he just says, I'm going to close out my career in Denver and take a little bit of a discount. I always felt like the Nuggets overpaid him last year and this year in hopes that they can talk him into taking a big discount next, you know, the next 2 or 3 years to sort of either come off the bench or just, you know, be a value contract. He also grew up in Denver. Not a lot of people know that, but
I didn't realize that. That's crazy.
So he grew up in Denver until he was 13 years old. And so there's that connection there that kind of gives you hope that if things go well this year and he just likes it, I think this is a very Paul Millsap team. They're low key. They're underground. They're not very popular. And I think that kind of fits his personality. He's super quiet, but, So, you know, that would be the hope, I think, if you're Denver, not necessarily trading him this year. I do think, though, like I mentioned before, Gary Harris, they've tried to trade him so many times, and I'm glad they've all fallen through. But Jamal Murray might be that guy who turns into a above-average shooting guard, but he's just in the wrong spot, and maybe he has value that you could turn into, like, say, just for an example, a Tobias Harris and a Patrick Beverley, you know, a worse point guard, but you get two pieces instead of one. Maybe something like that could happen down the line.
If that happens, I can promise you that the Clippers will become my side chick with both Jamal Murray and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Yeah.
you put that many Canadians in one spot, and I'm going to start standing for you. But
oh, that's right. We got two Canadians. Trey
yes,
Lyles
you do.
Well.
Yes, the pride of Saskatoon. The Paris of the Prairies, as they call it.
Tyler Lydon's, I think, from like upstate New York too, which is close enough. You can claim that one too if you want.
No. Like that's New York. Wanna... It's close to Toronto. That Toronto's not even Canada, so like it's. But yeah, man, it still blows my mind that Lyles is from Saskatoon, because that's like it truly is in the middle of absolutely nowhere, and yeah. It's like 120,000 people. Just the weirdest thing to me, but, and speaking of, hey, if you're looking for that defensive upgrade, have you seen the vine of Colin Sexton flexing when he's scoring up a guy? That's what you need for, Jamal Murray. We will take him off your hands. We will rid you of that problem. If you like.
My favorite vine is when he was like slapping the floor and doing his little wrist flex thing on Josh Hart, when Josh Hart lit him up for 37 points.
That's the one I'm talking about. In all fairness to him, he wasn't guarding Josh Hart all game.
I just love the like, yeah, I'm gonna, that's such a Duke thing, right? I mean, to me, there's nothing more annoying than the guy that slaps the floor who's not an elite defender.
Well, it wasn't truly slapping the floor. It was just flexing his arms to show how engaged he was defensively, which I genuinely like, because it's just so over the top and ridiculous.
So over the top. Like, you got to lean into it.
If I was squaring him up, I wouldn't be able to keep a straight face. And I think there's some value in that defensively.
Did you ever see the vine of Darren Rovell guarding Kristaps?
Yes, of course I saw that.
Do you remember how intense he was? He like screams at him at one point, trying to get him to miss. That was what Colin Sexton reminded me of. Darren Rovell.
I think Darren Rovell got a hernia on that play.
It's the goofiest. Oh my god!
All right, Adam. Thank you so much for coming on. Really do appreciate your time. One more time, introduced you at the beginning of the podcast, but plug your stuff, man.
I would just say you plugged the one thing I actually care about, which was I did a a two-part documentary with Will Barton where I got – he walks me through his whole life. I got interviews from Damian Lillard, Gary Harris, Tim Connelly, lots of people. It's really cool. Check it out. Even though nobody knows Will Barton, nobody follows the Nuggets, but that's cool. It's just cool in a vacuum, so check that out.
Will Barton's a fun dude. If you don't know Will Barton, you should know Will Barton. Like, get on that right away.
He's the absolute coolest, man.
Now, your other prediction. Will the Cavs get RJ Barrett?
Oh, God. You know how annoying – you know Denver has never once moved up in the draft in any capacity? So if the Cavs somehow end up landing –
there's one thing we're good at. There's one thing we're good at, Adam.
I think the Cavs will win the number one pick, but I think Dan Gilbert's going to trade it for, like, Aaron Gordon or something. Or Carmelo. Carmelo.
He's going to draft Zion, and he's going to turn out exactly like Anthony Bennett.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much for putting a damper on. really appreciate that, Adam. Really appreciate you coming on. Also, want to give a big shout-out to all our listeners. You guys have been absolutely awesome with your support. Remember, support the podcast. Leave a rating. Leave a review. Subscribe. Unsubscribe. Resubscribe. Cook those books. And want to be part of our Chase Down Discord chat. If you're leaving a review on iTunes, take a little screenshot of that, email it to chasedownpod@gmail.com, and we will send you an invite to the Discord chat. So thanks again to Adam. Thanks to our listeners. And until next time, go Cavs.